Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events, Monday, November 16th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
And how are we today?
It's not bad for a Monday. I've been able to make it through. I haven't burst out in tears. It's a little bit painful, but I can handle it.
Well, certainly there was a lot of tears shed this weekend in various places of the world. We'll be talking about that here shortly. But first, let's get to gold today. Gold was down 130, up most of the day, but at 108,360. Silver's holding at 1438, upside to platinum, up 6 at 869. And palladium was up 11, a little over 2% at $554. The U.S. DX today, of course, is stronger, 0.58, 99.38, and crude oil today was also up big, 1.32 at 42.06. Paper markets today, you knew they were going to have a big day today. I saw some people, they were saying, oh, there was going to be a big crash today on Monday, but certainly that wasn't the case. You know, I don't know why these guys make all these short-term predictions. They're always wrong, but nobody ever remembers their wrong predictions. Good Lord, they're wrong 99% of the time, and that 1%, that's all anybody ever remembers. It just baffles me, but anyway.
Well, if you ever guess right, then you get to write a book.
For the rest of your life.
Back in 2004,
oh my gosh.
I guessed right on Tuesday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was correct, and therefore now I'm a guru.
What we say on this program, and then I'm going to go ahead and get to the paper numbers, what we say on this program, we are more right on a time scale than anyone else out there. Because we don't take those jumps. We look at things, I look at things at a long-term basis. I understand the power behind the manipulations in the stock market, in the world economies. I get it. And so many of these guys out there that make these projections, they really don't understand who's behind it, what's behind it, and what the ultimate goal is. They might pay it lip service. They might pay it lip service, but they don't understand. But today, the Dow was up 237 points at 17,482. The NASDAQ was up 56 points at 49.84. The S&P was up 30 at 2,053. 10-year yield, 2.27%. A little pressure on the euro, 107 down 0.16, and mainly it was the Asian markets that had more pressure. Hong Kong was down 1.75%, Japan was a little over 1%, and basically no changes at all in London and Germany. So, and certainly I'm sure everyone has and is following the Paris terror attacks, Al.
Yeah, it's the big news story, of course, and 100 and you get different reports. I've seen reports of allegedly over 150 people injured. So far as I know, the official number at this moment is 129. Mixed reports on, but 120, 150, somewhere in that neighborhood that died, and perhaps another 350 that were injured. Here's an article from the Washington Examiner, and it's interesting because, from my perspective, Obama not reconsidering plan to bring in Syrian refugees. All right? Just because some of these refugees coming into Europe are not actually there as refugees, but they're being allowed to enter the country, and their real intent is to act as terrorists. Obama's not going to take that into consideration. That's not a possibility for, I believe it's 10,000 he has earmarked to come into this country, or at least he's allegedly bringing 10,000 Syrian refugees into this country.
Over 100,000 per year is the latest numbers. I mean, that's big numbers.
The headline I looked at recently just today said 10,000, but I've also seen reference to 100,000. I don't know what his plan is, but it's crazy. All right, that's the main point about it. And what's really interesting to me about it is while Obama is unshaken in his determination to allow 10,000, 100,000 more Muslims to enter this country, and they won't be checked out to see if they're terrorists or whatever, he's also unshaken in his determination to impose gun control on the American people and, in theory, leave us every bit as defenseless against terrorists as the 129 who died and the 350 who were injured in last Friday's attacks in France. The reason, at least one of the reasons they get these attacks, is because the brilliant French, they have screwed their country up big time with liberal attitudes and gun control. You don't get guns over in France to speak of.
Well, in England, right? I mean, in Europe.
All of Europe. It's
all of Europe.
Yeah, I know. Europe is like that. You can invade Europe and you don't need tanks and fighter bombers and the rest of this sort of thing to do. Why do you need it? The Europeans don't have any guns. They're not going to stop you. You can invade, walk in with a box of paper clips or maybe a box of box cutters. All right, that's enough. Because the Europeans they think they're safe without guns. They think they're safer without guns. They're idiots. They laid the foundation. You're not going to pull that off easily here in Texas. You come down to Texas with an AK-47 and think you're going to bust into some place and just shoot some people, you're going to be in for a surprise because probably 10% of the people in the audience, they may be armed. And they'll start shooting back, and all of a sudden you're going to have a problem, and you're going to wish you'd stayed home with your AK-47 rather than coming to Texas.
The sad thing about this is that these people that have done this, they really don't care if they die or not, so it doesn't really matter whether you have gun control or not. They perhaps won't kill as many, but as far as them living, they don't want to live anyway. But what was interesting is I watched a lot of this reporting on Friday and into Saturday, and there was reports when they started talking about where these guys got the weapons and so forth. And there was reports there. Surrounding in certain areas. If you have this is where all the criminals are harbored. This is where they all live. And if you have the money and if you have the connection to that area, pretty much what was said, you can get any type of weapon that you want.
Yeah, I understand.
So here is a prime example of you have the gun control for the people, but yet guess who has the weapons? Because the big discussion was how did these guys get the weapons inside of France? And this is how this topic
came up. You
get
the money, you get anything.
If you have the money, all you have to do is go to the suburbs of Paris and get any type of weapon that you want.
And I'll tell you something else. when you talk about getting any type of weapon that you want, we're not saying that you could get a six shooter or you could get a 9mm semi-automatic. If you want to get an RPG grenade launcher in France, they're there. Why are they there? Because most of the guns are illegal. And when you make most guns illegal, it's like making drugs illegal. You make them extremely profitable, and all of a sudden there's a black market where you can buy not just six shooters and 9mm. You can get grenade launchers. You can get who knows what all they have over there. It's all available, and it's there because there is a black market, a network of if you're going to set up a secret black market for six shooters and 9mm pistols, I guarantee you, if it's got to go black, you're going to have full automatic weapons, you're going to have 50 caliber machine guns. It's all there if you want to get it, and it's there because the geniuses in government said we're going to restrict all firearms, and what do they wind up with? They wind up with a bazaar of firearms.
There was also something that I saw was going into, let me pull up my report here, going into the situation on Friday. There was lots of what they called chatter. In fact, you had Turkey, and there was Turkey and another country that had warned France. They said there was all kinds of chatter leading up to this attack in Paris. And here, you know, again, are they going to tell the people? No. Are they going to do anything? No. And you have all these people who lost their lives because this so-called the warnings and the chatter was either ignored or didn't want to let anyone know because of any type of fear or panic. And, of course, you know what? Hey, it's an economy. You don't want to disrupt any type of
people
functions that are going
on. People die,
they
die, but that's better than losing money. I mean, we're coming into the Christmas season. Presumably, it's a big time. It might be the best commercial portion of the year for France as well as it is here in the United States. And we don't want to disrupt the flow of money by needlessly warning people that there might be some crazies out there trying to shoot. All right. So, you know, business is business, Melanie.
But so, you know, it's I found that, and, you know, you didn't hear a lot of talk after the first few reports of these things, and that's why, you know, I thought it was sort of an important. And, of course, Obama had a press conference today in Turkey at the G20 meeting. Most of that meeting, of course, was taken up by what happened in Paris. And climate change, which is, you know, before he had this press conference, and it took him several minutes to even get to the events of Paris, climate change was obviously more important.
Yep, that
and
was
of course,
a big deal.
You know, and that was, I didn't catch the complete 45 minutes of his display of defending Muslim religions, but there was a stunning contrast between his words of action and the president of France, who wants to go in there, called it an act of war, wants to go in and to destroy ISIS. And, of course, Obama is still calling ISIS ASIL, or ISIL. Maybe it's ASIL, too, but ISIL. And does not still mention ISIS when everyone else, and certainly the people and President Hollande did. So it was, and he confirmed that these Syrian refugees, they needed to be accepted as for compassion of the children and the young people, and it, the refugees and the acceptance and bringing them in must continue.
Yeah,
and he even made comments that there was views coming out of the United States that we should only allow Christians in the country, and he was appalled. He was absolutely
appalled. Yeah, we should only
appalled.
Allow Muslims. My and feeling on it is we should allow as many Muslims as the Muslims are prepared to take Christians. How many Christians are you taking into Syria? That's how many Muslims we'll take in over here. You're not taking any Christians.
Them.
We're not taking any Muslims.
And the reporter who was covering this story, recovering the, you know, his press conference, you could tell he was visibly shaken by the things that Obama and by Obama what he was saying or not saying. And you could tell he was angry, and he was in disbelief of what was coming. And I too sat there, and I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me. And it's, you know, I didn't expect them to come and say, you know, we're heading to war with, you know, but I really thought there'd be a little bit, I don't know, something. But instead, what I heard was, it left me confused as far as who is this person.
Yeah,
and
no. What is he really trying to do?
It was shocking.
He's arguing for compassion for these people, and I understand that, and everyone does, but how much compassion do these people have for people who aren't Muslims? Right? How much compassion do they have for Christians in their own communities right now? The point is, you are not going to get people who are truly Muslim. If they're going to cling to their faith, they cannot assimilate into the United States culture. It can't happen. You can't be a Muslim and assimilate. Yes, you can profess to be a Muslim in the same way a lot of Christians profess to be Christians, but they're just hustlers and con artists. I get that. But if you're sincere about your Muslim faith, you're not going to assimilate into the United States culture. Instead, if you're going to wait until there's enough of you to destroy to that culture. This is not something that easily coexists, and if it were up to me, I wouldn't let another Muslim into this country. And it's not because I disrespect them per se. I simply recognize that culture is not conducive to ours. They believe, oh, yeah, they believe they want religious freedom for Muslims. Yes, we want religious freedoms. But you put them in a position of majority, and they're going to take your head off. They don't believe you're entitled to religious freedom. They just use our belief in freedom of religion in order to take advantage. They are invading in the same way that the refugees are invading Europe, and if we allow it to continue, we are going to be badly disabled.
Now, there's already been discussions, Al, of a false flag attack, and I don't even know where to go with that.
Where to go with but that, Mike? It's Hillary Clinton and Rahm Emanuel. A crisis is a terrible thing to waste. And there's some people that will simply take, I don't care what happens. If a meteor lands somewhere, it's going to be evidence of some sort of a false flag event or something else.
People
try to exploit it for their own good.
However, what's interesting, though, is Hollande is going, he wants constitutional changes to fight terror, which is kind of, you know, the same type of thing as we saw here after 9/11. And, you know, he was also, you know, he had President Bush in a classroom and Hollande is at a soccer game. So, you know, it is kind of, you know, very similar circumstances and so forth. But also, I just wanted to get back to the refugees. I want to do say there are governors who are saying no to refugees.
Yes.
So, folks, you have governors of North Carolina, Arizona, Florida, Ohio, Mississippi, and Louisiana that made announcements on Monday. You also have Illinois, Indiana, Massachusetts, Texas, Arkansas followed, saying they are refusing Syrian refugees relocating to their states. You have governors in Michigan and Alabama who said their states would postpone efforts until federal officials fully reviewed security clearances. Governor Bobby Jindal asked the White House how many Syrian refugees have been resettled in Louisiana. Well, right there, I scratched him off my list for a candidate, because if you're a governor and you have no idea how many
already been. Well, he's former governor, isn't he?
Pardon?
Isn't Jindal former governor? He might not have current information.
Okay, hold on. Some video went off in my headsets. But so, folks, call these offices. You know, call these offices and let them know. You want your governor to follow suit. You know, and, you know, that's a way of saying no. Call them up. Flood them.
The whole thing
flood
is
the
stupid.
Phones.
The whole thing is stupid. And it's completely, again, I harp on this notion about culture. You've got to understand and respect your own culture if it's any good. And you've got to understand that your prosperity and your life expectancy will depend on whichever culture you choose to embrace. You are a dependent on your culture. And if your culture is inferior, you're going to live a substandard life. If your culture is superior, you better recognize it and hang on tight. The Muslims are not here to help you with the culture that made this country great. Whether we'll grab that again remains to be seen, but they're not here to restore or support that culture.
And it isn't about hate. It isn't about racism. It's about protecting. It's about
self-defense. It's about personal survival. If some people want to roll around on wooden wheels, that's fine with me, but don't tell me I have to do it. I have a different culture that doesn't require wooden wheels, and I'm happy with it. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind folks, we have AU $5 Liberty gold pieces. They're beautiful coins, dated prior to 1907. A lot of the dates are earlier than 1900. AU $5 Liberty gold pieces. They're almost a quarter ounce of gold. Give us a call, $350. It includes your shipping costs. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you Visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for the weekly newsletter, and, of course, these radio programs are archived Monday through Friday and the longer-term archive. Plus, you can listen live. And, again, for those of you who listen at a later time or you listen to a rebroadcast, if you have a question, and just because we're not live when you listen, that shouldn't stop you from submitting a question to us. Make sure you email us at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. And we got lots to talk about, so let's get started right away. I got a little articles. We have the G20 meeting. We have a Asia Pacific economic meeting going on. So, but let's finish up this about the Paris events. It's sad. It's tragic. It was terrible watching it unfold. I have no words for it, Al.
Well,
but,
I've told this story before, but I knew a lady in a church I was attending last year, and she and her husband, she'd been a business executive. Her husband had been a vice president of a major corporation. I won't mention the name, but you'd all recognize it. I guarantee you probably all have some of the product at home right now. They'd worked and lived in New York. They'd worked and lived in Chicago. They'd worked and lived in South Korea for a period of time. And she told the story before she moved down here to Dallas. She told the story that when she was in Chicago and when she was in New York and driving, she wouldn't dare leave her purse on the seat next to her driving or wherever.
Yeah.
All right. She had to put it down on the floor, cover it with a carpet or whatever, something to conceal the purse. Because if she left it where it could be seen, somebody would just smash the window while she was stopped at a stoplight or whatever and just smash the window, reach in, grab the purse, and make a run for it. She also knew that when she was driving, when she came up to an intersection and at a stop sign or a stoplight, she was stopped. She never came up where she was just bumper to bumper with the car in front of her. She stayed back 10, 15 feet always to give her room to maneuver in case somebody tried to hijack her car. She could go left or right. She had a place to go. All right. She had some maneuverability, and therefore she was less of a sitting duck. She moved down here to Texas, and she'd been here a year or two, and she began to realize, you know, I can put my purse. And she was a gun control advocate. Understand? She's coming from the East Coast, and she had, oh, yeah, gun control's great. We need that. She moved down to Texas, driving around in her car, and she'd been here for a year or two, and she began to realize, you know, I'm putting my purse on the passenger seat. I'm not worried about anybody robbing me. And she couldn't figure it out. And then she said, it's because of the guns. Texas has guns. You break into somebody's car, and they just might blow your head off. And that means it's safe to drive around with your purse on the seat, at least relatively safe, because the robbers don't want to get shot. In the other parts, Texas, or excuse me, in New York, in Chicago, got good gun control. That means it's open season on the unarmed. It gives the crooks a great advantage, and this is a lesson from New York, Chicago, and also Paris, France. You believe in gun control, you're foolish. Guns save lives. All right? And most people don't get that. But that's, I won't say most people, but a lot of people don't get that. And it's the truth of the matter.
Saturday night, there was a presidential debate, the Democratic presidential debate. I didn't watch it. I just can't stomach watching. I just can't, you know.
Tough enough.
No, sir. I should because that's how I'm supposed to threshold for pain.
Is that what this
I need to report on it. I mean, that's part of my job, but I just cannot listening to Bernie Sanders and to Hillary and to O'Malley. It's just nauseous. But anyway, we'll talk. We'll recap it from the Washington Examiner. We'll let them watch it.
We got it. Their article is headlined in debate. Dem views unchanged by Paris carnage. All right? And the point I wanted to get to, it doesn't matter. People got shot up over in Paris, but it doesn't matter. We'll still bring in Syrians or Muslims or whoever we want to bring into this country. We shouldn't allow that to change. You know, it's we can't be affected by common sense. We're going to do compassion instead of common sense. I guarantee these people won't have compassion for you if the day ever comes they're in a majority and you're in a minority. They will not have compassion for you. It just doesn't work out. But here's one of the Clinton and radical Islam. Moderator John Dickerson asked whether the former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, of course, agreed with Marco Rubio's use of the phrase radical Islam to describe ISIS and other terrorist groups. Do you agree with that characterization, radical Islam? Dickerson asked. Hillary replied, I don't think we're at war with Islam. I don't think we are at war with all Muslims. I think we're at war with jihadists. And that was basically, that was her point. I think she actually said something that's true here. When she says, I don't think we're at war with Islam, from my perspective, I think she means we, the government, are not at war with Islam. And I think there's truth in that. I think whether she intended to tell the truth or not, I think that statement is, there is a truth in it. From my perspective, our government is not at war with Islam per se. Yeah, we'll shoot them and bomb them, but it's not a serious The problem from their perspective is not the Muslims. Bring the Muslims in, bring the Satanists, bring the atheists, bring anybody you want. Any Hindus, bring any religion. The problem is the Christians. From the government's perspective, we may not be at war with Islam, but we might be at war with the Christians. They're the ones who have the Ten Commandments. They're the ones who have the unalienable rights given us by God in the Declaration of Independence.
We are the threat.
We are the threat. And the government, Islam, yeah, they're there. But, you know, they're like ducks in a shooting gallery. You can shoot them or not as you bomb them. Doesn't matter. But bring them on in. As long as they are working on Christians, no problem. Now, that may be a little bit of an extreme opinion, but nevertheless, it appears to be, there's a grain of truth to it as far as I'm concerned. Trump jumped in on this. He was on CNBC. And U.S. and allies should have been hitting the terrorist funding streams on the oil and banking fronts. This is Trump talking to CNBC's Squawk Box interview on Monday. I've been saying attack the oil for 2 years. People would laugh and they'd scoff and they'd joke, Trump said. Now, all of a sudden, they started attacking the oil because that's a significant source of their wealth. He means the wealth of ISIS. He also lashed out at President Obama for what he said was a weak and ineffective response to terrorism. He said Obama won't even use the term radical Islamic terrorism. And then Trump goes on, this is a war. They don't wear uniforms. Trump adding that the cancer of terrorism needs to be stopped before it festers and festers and only gets worse. And he's got, it's a good point. He's starting to demonstrate, not just Trump, but I mean, people are beginning to see, look, something's got to be done about this. And it can't just be allowed to go on and on while we wink, wink, we're having a problem with Islam or whoever, and we don't really do anything about it. All right? If we have a problem and we're going to solve the problem, let's do something about it. Let's not pussyfoot around, sing kumbaya, and hope that everything works out. Here's another one that's really interesting to me. This is from Mike. Hadn't heard of it. That's M-I-C as in microphone. I'm not familiar with the publication, but nevertheless, it was on Yahoo News. And the headline is Anonymous just declared war on ISIS in a chilling video online. Anonymous, as many of you may know, a controversial hacking group known initially for exposing Chinese cybersecurity attacks on the United States, but they hack into a lot of different things. They go after people at times when and corporations that have been conducting their affairs in a way that Anonymous regards as antisocial and bad for people in general. And they'll go in, they'll bust into their computers or whatever, hack into them and do whatever they think has to be done to make people in positions of power realize they can be held liable by the people. So here comes Anonymous, and they are officially waging a war against ISIS. The hacktivists, term they use for hackers, of course, and political activists. Hacktivists posted a video to YouTube Saturday after the Islamic State took responsibility for Friday's deadly terrorist attack in Paris. And Anonymous says, Anonymous from all over the world will hunt you down. You should know that we will find you and we will not let you go. We will launch the biggest operation ever against you. Expect massive cyber attacks. War is declared. Get prepared. I find this fascinating. All right, while the government dithers around and maybe we'll do something and maybe we won't, here come the hacktivists. We are going to see a kind of vigilante justice. We are going to see asymmetrical warfare at its most asymmetrical. We don't need government. That's part of the message of what Anonymous is doing, they are at least implying. We don't need government to chase down and prosecute these bad guys. All we need are some motivated hackers determined to wreck the bad guys' bank accounts, computer and digital communication systems. Now you've got a little thing where you can sit back and say, power to the hackers. Boom, boom. You might remember that a little bit. Power to the people. Power to the hackers. Anonymous is demonstrating first that all governments are increasingly vulnerable to the people. You know, when the hacktivists, the Anonymous, they were going after private corporations primarily. Well, that's not the political significance of those attacks. It's not the same as we're seeing here. They're declaring war on, they are expressly declaring war on terrorists. This is just bizarre. This is extraordinary. This is essentially ordinary people, although they're uncommon in that they are competent to hack into people's computers and whatever. They are still something like ordinary people, and they're just saying, I'm not waiting on government to handle this problem. We'll handle it. We'll shut down their bank accounts. We'll steal the money out of there. I don't care where you got it. Put it wherever you want. We will find it. It's on a hard drive someplace. We're going to find the ones and zeros on the hard drive, and we're going to take them. We're going to make them disappear. All of a sudden, you're going to find out you don't have any money. All right? And it's also telling us that governments are increasingly vulnerable. All of them. Even the government, whatever government entity you can associate with ISIS. They are vulnerable. And number two, governments are increasingly irrelevant. People can handle this. These people giving us a war, they're creating problems for us. Fine. We don't need nuclear weapons. We'll just hack into their computers. We're going to do damage to these people without shooting any bullets. I think it's an extraordinary step for Anonymous. I think it's an extraordinary, I don't know, evidence of technology in the world today, how things really operate.
That is. But on the other hand, saying and doing are two different things.
No, I know.
And who's there to define terrorism? Again, you know, here you have this group. You don't know who they are. They can supposedly are smart enough to hack into anything in any place. So that even leaves you and I vulnerable to these people.
Does. Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm not so sure. I mean, it sounds grand, and it sounds that people, you know, a group or whoever they are, or taking a step to stop evil to some degree. But then again, you know, when. And I get they can't tell you who they are, but yeah.
I don't say that this is grand. I'm not arguing that this is necessarily a good thing, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But I'm saying it's a very interesting and, I think, significant change in politics, global politics.
Because
I don't think the government can keep up with them. I think the government is too slow moving. I think these people will dance and dart around the governments of the world while the politicians are trying to understand how to work a mouse. These people are hacking into computers, all right, like opening refrigerators.
I disagree because you have Microsoft, you have Apple, you have Facebook, you have a handful of these computer people who I believe have the ability to go anywhere, do anything, and stop whoever would be doing something if a government, particularly ours, would request them to do so, plus our government intelligence and so forth. So,
I'm not sure. After the hacktivists.
To threaten them is one thing.
After the hacktivists, because the hacktivists will threaten them. They're going to come after you.
Well,
you better have some very tight computer security to hold your operation together and prevent them. Say we're going to attack Anonymous. Oh yeah, well guess what? Anonymous may attack you.
Well, I'm just not so sure. You know, and how do you know that Anonymous really isn't government? And I'm not so sure.
I agree.
And I'm not even so sure that hacking is, you know, is as commonplace as they want us to believe.
I don't know that it's all that commonplace, but it is significant, all right? And it is certainly potentially significant. That's been understood to some degree ever since Drudge announced that Bill Clinton was having sexual relations with Monica Lewinsky. The internet very nearly got Bill Clinton impeached and thrown out of office. And that's when people started to say, holy cow, this is not just a game. This internet is powerful stuff. When I'm arguing, I'm not arguing this is good. I'm not arguing it's bad. It's like robots. All right?
Well, I'm arguing whether it's real.
They make things more efficient. They make things less expensive. That's good, but they also put people out of work. I'm not saying robots are good. I'm not saying they're bad, but I'm saying they are here. And I'm saying the same thing with these hacktivists. This is significant stuff. When the Anonymous is going after terror.
It's real, Al.
I think that's.
If it's real.
Story.
Huh?
I think it's an extraordinary story, yeah.
Well, you know what else is extraordinary?
Mm-hmm. The commercials?
Yes.
Oh. All right. Well, let's listen to some extraordinary commercials, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, and true to our word, we have returned after the commercial break to Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to make a short note. There's going to be a 2-day meeting of the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation, and that is being held in the Philippines, and of course, it's Obama and the leaders of China, Japan, Mexico, and other nations. It's a 21-member APEC bloc. There's going to be about 7,000 officials that will be participating in Manila Bay. And it's a two-day summit. Vladimir Putin is skipping the event due to the investigation on the Russian jetliner that went down. And so he's sending someone in his place. So I thought that was interesting. And, you know, I'm following the G20 meeting. And I think that needs to be noted. And we'll see if anything comes out of that. And also when Obama did his, I think it was 2014 at the State of the Union address, he announced MYRA. MYRA, the investment program for retirement savings and for pensions for the younger people. Well, they released that. That program was rolled out last week, and there was an interview held by Secretary Liu, who also described the U.S. economy as pretty positive right now and indicated that the biggest risk came from headwinds outside of the U.S. And so there's been a lot of criticism to this MYRA program, as it's not providing enough of a return for the investors, and saying that they would receive things below returns. And of course, he, says that that won't be the case. This is a starting point for people to start saving for their retirements and so forth. The stock market and index funds and the greater risk that comes with investing there makes more sense once these less wealthy individuals have accumulated more assets. So once they accumulated more assets, then they can go into the stock market and index funds and lose what they've accumulated. But anyway, he goes on and continues. He was asked, I think it was the reporter was from Yahoo. Liu called the U.S. economy a bright spot compared to other countries, and said that vast amounts of progress has been made over the past 7 or 8 years. And this is where it gets great. When I talk to other, and that means Liu, when Liu talks to other members of the G20, they ask him, what is the magic of the U.S. economy? The magic of the U.S. economy. And he says it is the resiliency of our people. And I'm there like, really? So, Al, it's magic. Is that the illusion that was created? Is that the magic that's been, that the stupidity of the American people have accepted? The people being so naive that they expect everything that comes out of Washington and the Wall Street, because the Dow Jones is at 18,000 and everything is grand. Everything else is ignored except this illusion that was created that everything is fine. But they did have, they changed everything. He comments on the fiscal and monetary tools that were used, the regulatory laws and everything else that was passed, where other parts of the world are reluctant to use and to change their laws like the U.S. did so easily. So,
well, they've got they've doubled the national debt during the Obama administration. He talks about magic. The question was phrased, what is the magic of the U.S. economy? And I'd argue there is no magic, all right, in the economy per se, although there might be a kind of magic in what remains of our original culture. So people still have something of a work ethic. There is some respect for property rights. Diminishing in the government's mind, of course, we don't need that. But there is a kind of cultural momentum from my perspective that helps to keep this country moving along like a ship at sea, even if the engine has stopped turning the propeller. The momentum of the ship is continuing to carry us for a while. And I don't, how long that's going to last, I don't know. But they've done terrible things. The point I'm trying to make is that it's not about the economy. The economy and the nation are two different concepts. We have a culture with the nation. With the economy, we just have ones and zeros on a hard drive someplace. And they have some theories that are advanced by economists and government and politicians. Well, I think we should do this, that, and the other. The truth of the matter is, after all of the money they've injected into the economy, into the banks that are too big to fail and so on, we really haven't seen much improvement. Admittedly, they have given us stagnation. We haven't collapsed. Got to give them credit for that. The whole economy hasn't collapsed, and it just might have, back in 2007, 2008, maybe 2009, could have fallen through the floor. They prevented a total collapse. You give them credit for that, but they haven't been able to inspire, motivate the people to get out there and borrow more money and spend more money and make the economy get hot. They haven't been able to do that, and this has to be disturbing to them. They've tried zero interest rate policy, and they've tried quantitative easing, where they inject trillions of dollars into the economy, and they didn't get much bang for their buck. All right? And it's got to be disturbing and even frightening for these people, because in my opinion, I don't think they've got any tools left. They don't have, after they get done trying QE, and it hasn't worked in Japan, hasn't worked in the United States, isn't working in Europe, isn't working in China, at least not so far. They've tried zero interest rate policy in several of the major economies. How's it working out? It's not stimulating the economy. It's not motivating the people. And why that's happening has to be a big mystery. This is like the dogs. You know, your dog all of a sudden stops taking orders. Hey, Spot, here's Spot. Come on. Spot just looks at you and says, Spot doesn't care. He's not taking orders anymore. And in a sense, that's what's happening with the people of the United States, Japan, and Europe, and China. To some degree, they are not overly impressed by their own government. The emperor, they are beginning to realize the emperor is nude, and this is important, I think, because these economies rely on public confidence. Even if that confidence is stupid, misguided, and ill-informed, you got to believe. Well, increasingly, people don't. And that's, I think, why the economy is not doing well. I think part of the reason we see banks that are too big to fail. Most of the people in this audience, you're not too big to fail. Who's protecting you if you run your business like an idiot and you go broke doing it? Is somebody going to say, oh, you're too good to fail. You're too big to fail. We're going to support you. Why is it that we have an economy that supports the super rich and doesn't support the ordinary people? This is the kind of discrepancy that sits there, and ordinary people can see it, and they understand, even if they don't, if they can't articulate some of the ideas we're talking about on this program, if they don't really understand the fundamental ideas, they still understand that they're not getting a fair shake. For example, zero interest rate policy. In theory, that's here. They're paying next to nothing on whatever you deposit into your bank account. Whatever you deposit into your IRA may be adversely affected by a zero interest rate policy. A lot of people are being robbed. This isn't just an economic policy where we're just going to turn a dial here and press a lever over here and everything will work in a mathematical fashion where we're all better off. Zero interest rate policy means people who have saved money for the future. Some of that money is for lending. Some of that money is for retiring. They're getting ripped off. They're being robbed by their own government. And the government said, well, it's all right to rob these people because it'll stimulate the economy. Well, it's not stimulating the economy. But even if it did, can we reasonably run an economy based on theft? Can we run an economy based on robbery? Can we run an economy and expect it to last where we say, we're going to rob these people over here and we're going to give the money to those people over there? We're going to give money that hasn't been earned to people, the banks that are too big to fail. They didn't earn the money. We'll give it to them anyway because it was important to support those banks. Where are we going to get it? Ultimately, from people who didn't incur the bill. They're not getting any benefit. They earn the money, but they don't get to keep it. If people understand they're not getting a fair shake, insofar as they understand that, I suspect this may explain why quantitative easing and zero interest rate policy aren't working effectively. Some people, I think, are just hitting a kind of moral gag reflex. They said, enough, enough. I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to be motivated. I don't care what the interest rate is. I'm not borrowing any more stuff because I know it's a racket. And for that reason alone, I'm going to distance myself from it. Yes, I could take advantage of zero interest rate policy, and I could borrow money at next to nothing. I get that. A lot of people think I'm stupid not to do it. But just because it's available doesn't mean it's right. You know? So I think, I don't know, where's it all going? The magic is maybe, the magic is not in the economy, but maybe it's in the culture where maybe, as hard as it is to believe, maybe there's a significant percentage of people in Japan, in the United States, in Europe, even in China, that have some sort of growing appreciation for morality. And they're saying, I don't want to participate in a system that's based on theft and deception and lies. They're getting it. And they just can't get into it. And I think maybe their reluctance to participate, even if it means passing up a free lunch, an allegedly free lunch. No thanks. I'll fix my own. I'll pay for my own. There's something about that that I think is contrary to the best interest of the economy, but it is celebratory in relationship to our culture. People maybe, you know, it's a crazy idea, but I still think it might be true. Some people are just honest enough where they're just, I don't want to participate in the theft. I don't want to be a bank robber. You know, you talk about bank robbers. We got Ben Bernanke and now Janet Yellen and the Federal Reserve in general. They've been running a 0.25% interest rate, prime rate essentially, for the last 8 years. How much money do you suppose that has taken from the people who've worked hard, lived responsibly, saved their money, deposited in the bank? How much money have they lost? How much money have retirees lost? If we took all the bank robbers in the country and calculated how much money have they stolen from the banks, would it be as much as Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen have stole from bank depositors? By means of just holding interest rates down to near zero? Who's the bigger crook? If I walked into a bank with a gun and said, give me your money, open up the vault, whatever, the average bank robber gets something like $5,000, $3,000, $5,000. That's all they usually get. Calculate how many bank robbers we have, add up all the money. How much of a threat do the bank robbers really pose? How much of a threat did the Federal Reserve actually create for the people? We're being robbed by the people running our government and our central bank. They rob us way more than the gangsters do, the bank robbers do, the rest of that. Bank robbers are lightweight. Federal Reserve people are big time thieves. They're destroying or taking your wealth. And they say, well, it's for good, it's justified. We have a good reason. When is theft justified? I mean, can we really run a system based on robbery and theft and exploitation and say, we'll take money, it's justified to take these people's wealth? Will that kind of economy hold together? And maybe the cultural, the values of the culture, maybe the morality. We find the morality in the nation. In the economy, all we find is profit and loss. In the nation, we find the morality and the cultural values. Maybe that's going to slow down the economy. We'll see. We'll see where the magic is before this is done. But just because we've done better than other countries, at least for the last several years, that doesn't mean that this is over. We have as much or more trouble facing us, headed in our direction, as any of the other countries you care to mention. We're avoiding that to a large degree right at the moment, but it's still, in my opinion, headed our way. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I are out of time today. We'll be back mañana. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my